98.7 WHCLFM, Clinton, New York. On the telephone with me, I have Spirit Child, and he is joining us this morning. And Spirit Child, could you first explain to the listening audience what your relationship is to Mental Notes?
Oh, Mental Notes is a band I founded in 1999, experimental fusion band. So, yeah, I'm a MC writer of this group.
And so then, unlike many MCs, you'll be singing with live music accompanying you.
Yeah. So over the past 10 years, I've been performing throughout New York and the country with this band, and we've incorporated many different instrumentation. Sometimes we have a horn section, female vocalists. We do a lot of jam sessions when we invite other fellow MCs and singers to accompany us on stage.
About how many musicians is it usually composed of, or does that vary dramatically?
It varies depending on the space, but usually it's about four. It's four of us. Right now we have keys, drums, bass. Occasionally we'll have a DJ, sometimes a visual artist to do some media programming, projection. And, yeah, we just did a show at the Blue Note December 3rd. And we had, about, I don't know, over the whole night, probably 15 performers, you know, join us and have, like, one big show, including a belly dancer, which is great. Yeah.
Multifaceted entertainment.
Yeah. So if you could imagine some hip-hop, belly dancing, poetry, some singing. We had a few guests, one from France and another one from Malaysia. So it was like very, very eclectic.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the other venues that you guys play in?
We play the Knitting Factory, Mercury Lounge. We've been doing a lot of things at the Blue Note. Play like once or twice a year there.
Mm-hmm.
Have like bigger celebrations. Mostly New York with this band. But when we travel out, we do a lot of colleges, so we do workshops and tours throughout different universities.
So if some of our listeners, students here on campus are interested, they can possibly book you guys to come and play here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've toured with a lot of different artists. Right now I'm on tour with an artist called Evan Greer, playing riot folk, so we're combining riot folk music with hip-hop, and a lot of it's acoustic and poetic, you know, formations of struggle. So we're doing a lot of that right now. And we just came back from Michigan University. We were in Pittsburgh. And this weekend we're going out to Lawrence, Massachusetts for the People's Music Network Conference. It's a lot of folk singers that are going to be there.
What kind of things inspire your music? Where does it come from?
95%, if not more, of the music is inspired by struggle. So a lot of it is like creative politics, trying to figure out a way to articulate many forms of struggle and make global connections through rhymes, you know, ranging from police brutality to like wherever I traveled. I spent some time in Chiapas, Mexico, so I talk a lot about the Zapatista movement and how it's connected with the Black Panther Party and things of this nature. So it's really just ways to like articulate our struggles and solidarity through songs. And love. There's a lot of love in there, too, but mostly love for the community, love for the people, and love for the struggle. I always think love is very, very political anyway, the way we deal with relationships and interact with each other. But, yeah, I'd say 95% at least is the music is all inspired by struggle.
How do you strike a balance between being direct about the message that you're putting out and between leaving some metaphor and interpretation in the lyrics?
That's difficult. You know, when I first started out, really really the balance is the band. I think having a band is helpful to be a bit more subliminal.
Mm-hmm.
But I tour a lot without my band because I can't bring them everywhere. So when I do a lot of solo sets or when I'm performing, for example, with Evan Greer, it's pretty much directly, there's no filter. I mean, it's straight political. Our audience is, they book us for that.
Mm-hmm.
So we do workshops and we're working with student groups who are organizing specifically in this vein. But when I'm in spaces that are like clubs, like the Blue Note or, you know, Mercury Lounge, Knitting Factory, things like that, it's a bit more subliminal. You know, there's still, you know where we're coming from, you know we're speaking of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can dance to it more, you can kind of get lost in the music. I think the band component is that balance, allows me to like create a bit more metaphorically, in that vein. But even still, there's a lot of music that we do with the band that's very hard on and, you know, yeah, no preservatives to say.
What role would you say music in general and your music in particular, play in affecting and shaping our culture?
Well, I always believe that music, art, any type of form, needs to be at least side by side with organizers.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back and forth. It's a reciprocal, relationship. Like it should be at least from civil rights movement and prior. Like there's always songs people are singing or Toy and South Africa, just like movement, dance, music, that energy needs to inspire our organizing as well as the organizing needs to inspire the music that we're doing. So I feel like, from painters or visual artists like Emery Douglas, from the Black Panther Party, who's just like, if you're a revolutionary and you're an artist, you need to always talk about struggle. You need to articulate that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that 100%, which is why, like, outside of the balance of Mental Notes and me performing solo, like, I formed an artist collective called Movement in Motion. And this was after maybe 3 years of the creation of the band because I noticed that our venues that we played in, mostly bars, it wasn't enough to just perform. We had to perform to inspire, but perform to inspire to organize. And so we created a space where artists and activists would get together and figure out how to take these songs and make them some kind of blueprint or strategy for organizing and not just rap or do a poem about a song that is articulating a form of struggle. Like, we need to research, we need to do some actions around it. So I think there's a very special connection when those two worlds meet. It's a little difficult. I found a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But, when I go different places, like for Prague or Germany, people are so head-on organizing, and then you throw an event, some kind of show where people are dancing, communicating, socializing.
Mm-hmm.
The energy is so different. You reach more people, but hopefully you reach people to get involved somehow. Because I've also seen what one of my mentors would describe as like the inoculatory effect, where you have this amazing music and it's all about struggle, and then all you're doing is dancing and you become numb to getting involved because you're hearing fight the power, let's get down, let's break the system. But there's not a lot of movement because it's a song, it's like it's an energy. In reference to like Public Enemy, where there was like a real height,
mm-hmm.
In the 80s, 90s, like, all right, cool, we're going to do this, shut them down, shut down Nike. But then as far as the action that galvanized around these songs, there really wasn't a next step to that. It was like, we're just articulating, the negative aspects of sweatshops and trying to show like what this system is, but we don't really have a plan or an alternative world per se to say how we want to live, in a direction. So if we don't have that next step, then all the music that we're doing is kind of just momentary, and I hope that that's not the case when we perform. So that's why I like to organize outside of doing a concert, which is why we offer workshops, you know, on the prison industrial complex or with Evan Greer. A lot of it's dealing with gentrification in the LGBTQ community. So many different forms of struggles we try to, like, have conversations and organize towards.
And does that occur after the music sessions or before the music sessions? Or
usually before.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll usually come into a campus or a community, do a workshop anywhere from 2 to 4 hours during the day, and then a concert at night to kind of unwind. And we encourage, I mean, a lot of our work on campuses is, like, multifaceted. It's just really, like, trying to allow, especially with the project that we're doing, different groups to come together. So, you know, people that would come to a hip-hop show normally wouldn't go to a folk show and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can, like, bring these elements together, get the hip-hop student union, Black Student Union,
mm-hmm.
Environmental justice groups, you know, like all these people together in one space, which usually is not in the workshop form. It's usually more in the artistic jam session form, which is where I think it's music comes in. It's very special in that way, where we can all dance
mm-hmm.
to a vibration and be in one space and socialize and organize together and share ideas. So, yeah, we usually do the workshops during the day and a concert at night.
I remember
even still, in the workshops, where they're more creative, they're not just lecture-style workshops, where we're sharing poetry, writing, even encouraging those participating to create with us. And then at night, our concerts end up becoming, excuse me, a little bit like workshops. So we're performing, but we're also talking and, you know, trying to strategize with our community, whoever we're performing for, you know. So we try to give at least a little bit so they can go over.
Sounds like you guys are blurring boundaries and crossing different lines.
Hope so.
So I remember Amiri Baraka saying, if you get the people who like the bluegrass music and the people who like the blues together, they're going to wear everybody out.
Right. That's a good one. I mean, it's definitely true. And I'm not really sure of any other way. I mean, we started the collective after going to a few protests and rallies, the anti-war demonstrations in about, I think it was 2003. And, you know, we're going there, we don't see hip-hop on stage. You know, we see singer-songwriters, we see a lot of speakers, but we don't see anything that's representing our communities on stage, you know, as far in the form of, like, rap during this time, you know, where there was, like, a million people going out to D.C. and marching and rallying. And then we started connecting with anti-war groups and then getting on these stages and platforms and performing in our community and bringing people out, you know, in busloads and saying, all right, we need to organize to get people from the South Bronx.
So did you
DC.
Did you perform in D.C. at some of the anti-war rallies?
Many times. We were working a lot with the IAC during the time. When ANSWER and IAC were together, we were working with, we even did some stuff with UFPJ when they had, you know, those major things and separate fundraisers. So those are some of the larger groups that we've organized with and allowed us to have a space to perform in D.C. And even in New York when they had the major rallies in New York and Convergence. So a lot of times we would connect with them and try to bring some music. But now it's good because a lot of people feel like, you know, so many years have passed where hip-hop and poetry, you see that more often and not just mainstream spaces. Like, you can go to an anti-war demonstration, and chances are you may get an MC performing at some point or another, because there's a lot of rap activists, per se, you know, that are out there doing work in their communities and sharing the stage.
many musicians out there with no political message, rapping about nothing or partying. How did you get inspired to be on this path of speaking about political and social justice themes?
Yeah, I think I started out that way. You know, I started out, you know, emulating and, like, following a lot of MCs during the 90s and 80s who were just, you know, freestyling, kind of, like, rapping about, you know, nothing and partying and things of that nature. I was definitely doing that. But then in high school, I had a really cool teacher, mentor, who started expressing, you know, a lot of concerns with not just the music that's going on, but with the fact that a lot of us in his classroom didn't know our history. So he challenged us to not only, like, read Malcolm X, but, like, how would we reframe Malcolm X? You know, how would we be able to articulate these books that we're reading in a way that we can connect to our fellow peers?
Mm.
So naturally, it became talent shows. It became, instead of freestyle battles, it became like these really community-oriented conversations and dialogue through hip-hop, you know, summarizing struggle, you know, summarizing slavery and where we're at today. So from that, you know, from high school, I started taking those elements into consideration. But it wasn't until much later, even my first 2 years of college, I dropped out after 2 years. My music really wasn't heavy on the political side. It was the opposite to what it is now. I mean, I had some political content, but, you know, I'd say it'd probably be like 15-20% of my material. And then I started working with different groups, and I met a filmmaker who was at NYU, and she challenged me. She was doing this small documentary film, and then we started bringing the community around these issues. And also the times, you know, like, it was kind of hard to ignore what was going on, at least I felt, or maybe it's because where I was at, but during that time, like, the anti-war movement was really gaining a lot more momentum. And it was like this kind of, at least that I was able to see, you know, and get involved with. There were more in my community, labor groups, and people were really trying to recruit. So it was something where I was like, all right, it's in my face. You know, I can't really get away from that. So we started watching documentaries, having political education, and just meeting. And our meetings were in the form of open mics. You know, we didn't really have an agenda. We just would meet every week under having open mics where everybody could just express themselves, and we'd bring a speaker from the anti-war movement to kind of, like, talk about what's going on, and then from there we would phrase our, like, vibration of music, you know, and challenge ourselves to, like, freestyle about it or write a song about it.
I'd like to play a song of yours. I can choose from here. Dreamscapes, Not I, I Is Your Eye, Redefined to Define. One that you'd prefer that I play?
I Is Your Eye is a good one.
Okay.
Well, I'm old school, it's the beginning of rap. X that, more it's the beginning of pull back. From back, Africa black. Red, black, and green, get a black back. I hit them off when I'm breaking them off. Shaking them all, taking them off like the call. Gotta get them off, gotta get them up to rush and disrupt that boss. Anyway, I'm looking for my getaway. Better days appear to be right away. And I'm ready for this. The black fist make catalyst for the resistance. Instance in this moment in time, moment to sit, moment to rhyme, moment to spit. Hold this time, hold it, twist. I is your eye. When you fight, I fight. You die, I die. I is your eye. When you live to live, I live to live. Rise. I is your eye. When you fight, I fight. You die, I die. I is your eye. When you live to live.
cause I'm that black car, freedom fighter, African that loves soda, organizer, ready rider, liberation screams inside of me. See, I'm on fire, for the people never tire, forever live until I die. Get them high, till we all free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight back.
Yep, yep, yep. Can't debate the human race, sees the mother earth, how much more can she take before the earth wakes and the sun don't set? Between you and I, she's quite upset. No regrets, but it's quite a mess. You got the ozone full blown, made it an explode. Culture sold you digital download. My space, your space, never be left alone. Your face ungrown, the cell phone, your soul gets cloned, and I even phone. Like a robot, your clock, WWW die. I won't stop hip hop, but I feel that hip hop stop before punch the clock. I won't drop, keep the planet rock. I'm in it like granite to rock to the pyramids. Yep, yep, here it is. Keep for the next. Here we go, go. It's your eye, when you fight, I fight, you die, I die. I, it's your eye, when you live to live, I live to live, rise. I, it's your eye, when you fight, I fight, you die, I die. I, it's your eye, when you live. I'm that black car, freedom fighter, African that loves soda, organizer, ready rider, liberation screams inside of me. See, I'm on fire, for the people never tire, forever live until I die. Get them high, till we all free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight that.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight that.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight that.
Free. Yep, 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 yep. Come on. Ready rider, liberation screams inside of me. ACC, I'm on fire. For the people, never tie, forever live until I die. Get them high, till we all free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
We fight back.
Free.
It's like that.
Free.
Free.
Free. Yup, 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 yup. Come on.
Hip Hop Genius, and it's about this school that was built in St. Paul, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
13 years ago, and it's around, it's called the High School of Recording Arts, and the Elements, what they do is project-based learning, an alternative to the public education system that, as we all know, is failing.
Mm-hmm.
So for good strategies and techniques on how to work with youth and not just have rap in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
But actually construct the way where we can have a hip-hop pedagogy, that book has been a very inspiring read for that. And, of course, you know, dealing with the dropout rates and going to the prisons and school to pipeline, all that stuff, you know, figuring out real ways to, like, work with the youth that we're working with now. Yeah, and of course, like, favorites, Frantz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth, those reads that I feel in the very beginning of organizing I dived into,
mm-hmm.
And has really helped my politics a great deal. And for teachers who are doing, you know, activist work or just work in the classrooms, anything from Paulo Fierro, you know, is very, very important. Pedagogy of the Oppressed, or Augusta Wilde, Theater of the Oppressed, is really good to incorporate some activities in the classroom. So there's a lot of inspiring books out there. I'm still getting my hands on a lot. And because I'm working with youth, some of them are a little inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm currently trying to find books that are academic and loaded, but in a language that, you know, junior high school students can understand, which is really complicated. And I think Hip Hop Genius is one that speaks from that point of view in a very simplistic way.
It sounds like what you described in St. Paul, Minnesota, is students working collaboratively instead of competitively in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
which
definitely
is a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Cooperation model versus competition model.
Yeah, and the patience and understanding. You know, a few things in that book, like one, they changed getting up, having an 8 o'clock in the morning start time class to a 10 o'clock, and they saw within the guidelines if there's any way that they could go around that. So using that kind of hip hop freestyle spontaneity type method and model, like they did that. So their classes run from 10 to about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and they have these all access studio passes where, you know, if a student is doing well, they get to use the studio anytime on the weekends, after school, as long as they're doing their work and the motivating factor is to create music, or some of them are really geared to fashion or writing a novel or whatever the case is. So they have their whole curricula designed around what they want to learn, which I think is amazing. And they still succeed beyond expectation for the standardized testing.
Mm. Excellent.
So that's important.
The music that's on the radio and television is big money music, and it supports and perpetuates the status quo, keeps the power in the hands of the powerful, and it doesn't question the culture of domination. How does music of unpopular themes or oppressed people get a voice?
That's a really good question. That's something I've been challenged with for the past 13, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only way we get a voice is by working with those that are speaking out against the system. And we need to rely a lot on, and like I mentioned earlier, it's like that reciprocity. You know, we need to have artists be more accountable to the communities that they're performing for,
mm-hmm.
as well as the communities being a bit more accountable to the artists that they would like to see and support. And I know a lot of times there are benefits and a lot of people can't afford to go to the concerts or buy the CDs, but we have to figure out a way that we're not pushing away the artists to being mainstream, because that has been done a lot,
mm-hmm.
Where artists are not getting enough support and they feel like, well, like they want to say something, but, you know, the message and their reserved content is for a limited few that they're not able to sustain themselves. I don't think that's true. I think there are ways that we can incorporate in our daily lives, you know, appreciation for artists. And again, you know, like challenging the artists to say, all right, cool, you know, we've went to a few of your concerts, you have to do these benefits, you know, for us, because someone was arrested or whatever the case is, we need you to come out, you know, and be in the streets with us. If we have that process more fluid, I think artists will have more of a platform, and we won't have to worry so much about the mainstream structure that exists. It's such a machine, you know, there's no way to compete against these conglomerate, you know, labels, and I mean, they're a machine, and I don't think, as an alternative structure, we should even think about competing against that. I think we should really focus in on our communities and try to create and be accountable to our communities, write songs that are relevant to the students that are in the classrooms, to their daily lives, and to the people that are organizing in the streets, and I think that's a way that artists will find space for their voice to be heard.
Sounds like a good way. What kind of words of wisdom would you give to young people who think they'd like to be doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm working with a group right now. I'm a director of a hip-hop program called One Mic, and it's a part of ArtStart. And we work with students coming from Rikers and Spofford, and they've been convicted of some kind of crime or something. And we partner with Alternative to Incarceration programs, and we do a lot of shows with them. And one thing I encourage them to do is to not just think of hip-hop as some kind of commodity or something to get to. At first, it's just like a form of expression, like write down words on a piece of paper. They don't even have to rhyme. It doesn't have to be a rap. Just write your ideas down. And once you write your ideas down, I feel like that's a blueprint to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And just be true to yourself. Like, don't try to emulate and write what other people are writing. Stay away from the radio and try to just really be alone with your thoughts and be, and keep your rhymes like a journal, at least for the very beginning. Get to know who you are. You'll be very surprised. And share. You know, once you start developing that talent, always think of ways to, we just did a showcase yesterday in a younger juvenile detention facility, and my older youth came and performed for them and spoke to them, and where they feel like, I'm only 20 or I'm 21, I'm still going through these things every day, but they still felt encouraged and inspired to share stories and say, look, I'm doing music right now. You don't have to continue to do this path that you're on. You know, you can do something else. And I was really excited because, you know, I'm 33, so every time I go to a classroom, there's a lot, it just gets more and more of that age dynamic. So what if I could bring my youth to come in to speak to younger kids, I feel like that's the work. You know, we have to figure a way to think of having legacies and having younger ones just step up and take leadership roles. So once you found your voice in hip-hop and producing or whatever, figure out ways to, like, do workshops and teach what you do, because that only makes you stronger. So those would be some things of some small wisdom that I would give people to encourage artists to do. Just to think outside of themselves from the very beginning is a great and rewarding thing.
Sure. So now that we're at the end of the interview, I'd just like to send out some thank yous. And the last question that you said was a very good question about the status quo and the big radio and television, big money music. That came from my girlfriend, so I have to give her...
Cool, definitely. Thank you for that.
I have to give her the thanks for that. And I'd also like to thank Lisa Duggan for setting up this interview with us. And I definitely thank you very much for your time and your music and what you're about and what you're doing. I really appreciate it, Spirit Child.
Thank you, Peter. It was a pleasure.
And I hope to hear you again live.
Thanks.